It was as though this plan had been with him all his life, pondered through the seasons. Now, in his 15th year, crystallized with the pain of puberty.
So, why'd you move here?
My mom had to get a restraining order against my stepdad. He has emotional problems.
Oh, I have those too. What kind of emotional problems does your dad have?
I met a new friend.
Real or imaginary?
You're a cop, Tony.
Imaginary.
I'm gonna tell you a little story today about a young man whose life was completely destroyed by these instruments of fear.
I haven't seen stuff.
Donnie is experiencing what is commonly called a daylight hallucination.
I have to obey him. He saved my life.
Have you ever seen a portal?
Has he ever told you about his friend Frank, the giant bunny rabbit?
The what?
Every living thing follows along set path, and if you could see your path or channel, then you could see into the future, right?
I'm not going to be able to continue this conversation.
Don't worry. You got away with it.
What is going to happen?
I only have a few days left before they catch me.
When's this gonna stop?
You should already know that.
Hello everyone and welcome to Horrorsperia. My name is May and I'm here to do a special pod with you for my favorite film, Donnie Darko. This wasn't originally planned. My cat just recently died. She was hit by a car on June 3rd, and she was my emotional support animal. She was my best friend. She was everything to me. And it's been a couple of interesting weeks since that's happened. We recorded another pod, and that will be up within about a week, but I felt like I had to do something to honor my cat, who has already been featured on the pod before, and I couldn't think of what to do until I just started thinking about the reasons why I named her and how much I missed her, and it made sense to me to finally give details on why Donnie Darko is my favorite film. It's not really a horror film, but it is horror adjacent, I would say. It's a science fiction thriller kind of film that definitely has and utilizes its horror elements and horror tropes very well. And this is what I want to talk about today, and also talk about a little why I decided to name my cat Darko, and kind of have it all come to a sense of memorial for her in this special pod. But to give details on the film itself, it is a 2001 American film directed and written by Richard Kelly on an original story that he had in his mind. He wrote it when he was 23, which blows my mind. I don't think I would have written anything this strong when I was 23. And it's his first film. He's done a couple of films since then. Honestly, not anything that I would really recommend. But I think when you just knock it out of the park so well on your first try, I mean, I wouldn't want to follow up Donnie Darko. I truly think that it is a perfect film. He himself and even Jake Gyllenhaal, who's the one that stars in this film, there are a lot of people in this film. There's Jake Gyllenhaal, Maggie Gyllenhaal, Jenna Malone, Drew Barrymore, Patrick Swayze. There are a lot. They're all coming. Alex Greenwald and Seth Rogen are in this film as well. This is one of Seth Rogen's first films, actually. And it's just both of them, both Richard and Jake themselves, they say that they have no idea how to describe Donnie Darko, and that is in as much as magic. And I actually agree. It's really hard for me to tell you and sit here and say, well, yes, this film was about this. I think a really simple way to distill the plot without too many spoilers is this troubled teenager should have died in this freak accident, but he doesn't. And when he doesn't die, this man in a bunny suit starts to haunt him in his dreams. And he tells him in 28 days, it's this long time sequence, but it's 28 days, blah, blah, blah. The world is going to end. And so Donnie, who is Jake Gyllenhaal in this film and is the main character, has to figure out, you know, what can he do to sort of stop it. And so we delve into time travel deeply in this film. We delve into suburbia satire. We delve into 80s nostalgia. This film is as much about time travel as it is an homage to 80s films in a way, as well as a plea for humanism, a plea for existentialism, all within the archetypes of suburbia in 1988, Virginia. And that in and of itself is really special in terms of filmmaking. But what really blows open this whole movie is the relationship between primary universes and tangential universes and simulation hypotheses. It's a film that does sometimes veer into dense language, but the sight is never lost, because the undercurrent of romance and self and sacrifice and love and fear are so intertwined in every single scene. There really isn't a waste of a scene here. And specifically, it uses elements of horror in very sinister emotional ways. Just even hearing The Killing Moon for me just brings me back to that opening shot of Jake Gyllenhaal, Donnie, going down the bike on the mountain and trying, you know, just kind of basking in the teen angst. Because at the end of the day, this film really, what to me, it's more about loneliness and sacrifice and what you would do for those that you love, even when you see just the multifaceted way of existence and how we accept existence and things like that. It's also a really good metaphor for how perspectives shape universes. So in this film, we essentially have two universes that we talk about that are pretty much implied without trying to have to give too much away. But the thing is, we operate in these different universes without the artifice of time travel having to be included. When we have a perspective of someone based on information from someone else, or how perspectives differ from the same situation, it's really opening up the commentary for what is the primary universe and what is the tangential universe and what version of ourselves are real and not real. And I think for such an intense topic to be distilled in such a beautiful and personal and emotional film, it's something that is actually very rare, especially in the teen film archetype genre and way. And so I have always loved it. I think when I first watched this film, I was 12. I didn't see it in theaters, but I did see it when it came out on Blockbuster. So this was like a home video kind of film for me. So I was about 12 or 13. And I can tell you, I genuinely didn't understand most of it, but I really liked the soundtrack. I really liked the aesthetics. I think it's shot beautifully. It also was just, it's a digestible film. It's weird, definitely, but I think it's an easily digestible film, even if somewhere along the way it might lose you if you're not completely enveloped in all of it. And then it's just something that I kept coming back to, because even if I didn't really understand it the first time, I couldn't mistake that tone. I think this film has one of the most unique tones of all time. Like I said, it really oscillates well between this homage kind of thing, as well as this romantic kind of thing, but also this really pessimistic and optimistic way of looking at the world. I recently just saw Raphael Bob Waksberg do a reading in DC at Politics and Prose, and I'm reading his book right now, and it's an excellent book. He is probably my favorite writer right now, so definitely watch BoJack Horseman, go buy his books, Someone Will Love You in All of Your Damaged Glory. But my point for mentioning that is he said that he finds that with a lot of his work, and especially his book, he views it as a Rorschach test. It's about many different things and many different facets, but whatever it means to the reader, the viewer, that's what it means to that person. And that meaning is just as valid as anything else. And I think that's the beauty of Donnie Darko. You can watch it when you're 12. You can watch it when you're 28. You can watch it when you're in love. You can watch it when you're heartbroken, depressed, whatever it is. There's so many different layers to the significance in this film, whether you want to read self-sacrifice or meaningless or sadness or a greater good into it, whatever it is that you want to read into it, it is there and it is nourished still, even after all of these years, nearly 17 years later since the film was released. And I honestly don't know if I can say that for a lot of films. I don't think in many ways this film has even aged that much for me, and it has made me a lifelong fan of almost everyone involved. And I really admire the care and youthfulness and tenderness present to make this film as complete as it was. And so when I got my cat Darko about 2 years ago, I notoriously wasn't actually someone that was that fond of cats, but my best friend, Chris, he said he found about a 2-week-old cat in the parking lot of an Old Navy, and he was going to turn her into a shelter if he couldn't find anyone for her. And it was just one of these things where I was like, well, you know, I'll just see what happens. You know, I've never had a cat before. I lived alone at the time. I didn't have any pets. And I wasn't really sold on her. And I would even say the first 6 months with Darko was very, very weird, because she was a really feisty cat, actually. She was a biter. And, you know, everyone told me that because she was so young and taken from or lost her family, and she hadn't even made it to a shelter, that she would kind of have some temperamental issues. And she did. But it's weird. Like I said, I found her in Florida, but I had to move up to DC with her. And with all of that and getting acclimated to a new house and moving somewhere where we had absolutely no friends, and I transitioned to starting to work from home more instead of when I lived in Florida, I had a 9-to-5. It just deeply bonded us in ways that I never came to expect. A lot of times I feel like I really began to understand my cat after we moved up here. And, you know, I keep going over and over the different things that could have happened or what I could have done to kind of fix something, because it was a freak accident. She was only 2 years old. And when I keep thinking of that, when I keep meditating on my guilt and my grief, I keep realizing that that's kind of just what Donnie Darko in essence was about. I named her Darko because it was my favorite film, and I thought it was kind of a funny thing, you know, naming a black cat Darko. And I've always named my animals. I had dogs with my mom growing up, and I always named them after horror characters, actually. We have Cujo and Carrie back home. And it just made sense to me, you know, name her after your favorite thing, because she was an unexpected blessing, and she definitely was an unexpected blessing. And she oftentimes felt like my only connection to anything real up here. But, you know, I am so grateful for the time that I had with her, and I keep rewatching things that and re-listening to things that I remember. I have such strong memories of her just sitting in my room, putting something on when I was depressed, and just watching her and her watching me. and it was okay. It felt like peace. And I think, without spoiling the ending too much, watching the ending of this film, you know, sometimes you cry, sometimes you understand. But I think what I always do feel is some weird sense of calm and peace, because I understand that that is what fate had to be. And that is what Darko essentially teaches to his family as well, even if it's through intense tragedy. And so I would like to think, I never know if I believe in fate or not, but whatever it is, I do think that whatever feelings I gain from this experience, or even rewatching a film like this, or revisiting memories and still dealing with grief, like this friend that I have to get used to for the rest of my life, and navigating out of the guilt and what ifs and what abouts, I think all we can really take comfort in is in that peace when things are complete. Thank you for listening to this bonus pod. We should have our Nation State and the Horror Film pod up by next week. And I hope to see you guys or hear from you guys soon. Catch you on the waves.